Hey y'all, this is Brandy at Brandy Arts Tattoo on Instagram. I'm actually PB Smooth's tattoo artist, so that's how I found you guys. I really, really enjoy your podcast. I'm a mark of wrestling also, so I super enjoy it. I listen to it while I'm tattooing. I can't wait for more content. I was just leaving you a message to say awesome job.
Hello, my name is Andy. And I want to give a salute to the Marks with Mikes. I just got finished listening to the Savio Vega podcast. Man, that was fire. So I'd like to congratulate you guys on a good show. And I'm looking forward for the next episode. Y'all have a good one.
Kevin over on Instagram, just reaching out in regards to the Big Twan Tucker giveaway. Keep doing what you're doing. Looking forward to the future episodes.
Yo, welcome back once again to another edition of Marks with Mikes. You already know what it is by the sound of my voice. It's your boy, Mr. 6'9", JT, back in this piece once again. And of course, I'm rolling with my co-host, L. Cheech. What's going on, homie?
What's going on, people? How's everybody doing?
Shit, I mean, everybody doing good. It's been one crazy roller coaster of a week. Just did graduation this past Friday.
Congrats, bro. Big.
Thank you, man. But big move. Enough about me. I had to apologize to the listeners because we could not release episode this Sunday. But I told you, everything will be explained in 2 weeks. So with that being said, I couldn't give you no hint. But the only thing I could tell you is this. Our guest definitely, most definitely knows pimping ain't easy. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, I give you no other than the Godfather, Charles Wright. What's going on?
Man, what's happening, man? First of all, thanks for having me on here, man. I can't wait to chop it up with you, too.
No doubt, no doubt. Thanks for taking some time, you know. It's just like you said, you just got off a plane, so that's big. We appreciate that, man.
I look forward to it, man. I look forward to it. I've been prepared for it all day.
Word, word, word. So how was New York? How was everything in New York?
I was in Staten Island, which I don't know if you know the area, but it's like right on the border of Newark, New York. Yeah. Man, I've been there the last 2 weekends doing virtual appearances, kind of like this, but you know, you interact with, instead of being there, you know, up close and personal with people, now it's all virtual. So I've been doing signings out there, but man, they're cool with me, man. They keep me medicated. and they're right on time, man. New York's cool. New York, New Jersey. Newark, man, it's happening. They really take care of me out there.
Yeah, especially Jersey. You have some history with Jersey, right? When at first, that's where you went to start your wrestling career.
I went to the Monster Factory. I wasn't there really long. I was probably there a month or two when you probably should be there a year or longer. I was there for a short time, and Jerry Lawler seen me.
Yeah,
and I was so different at the time, and I was a monster, man. I mean, I wasn't 6'9".
Yeah,
but well, damn, my bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you play one sport, and they see you. It's like he could play another sport. We're gonna do whatever he can, and as you know, you're so skilled that you know you killed it. You know what I mean? And you know, why can't you not? You know, what can you do? You know what I'm saying? You can't do nothing. You know.
So next question in this line of questions that we got, because we got a ton. I mean, your story is definitely a story that definitely needs to be told on every platform. I don't care if it's been told before, but every story is going to be told different depending on the platform. So,
right.
So we do know that you definitely, you played some football, you played basketball and football, but you ended up getting your scholarship to go off to college.
I played basketball in high school. I wanted to play football. But my mom and dad wouldn't let me play it. Back then, I don't know if it's like that now, but back then you had to get your parents' permission, and they wouldn't sign it. So I played basketball instead. Yeah. In 1979, I'm telling how old I am, but that's my senior year in high school. I was Northern California Basketball Player of the Year.
Okay.
And, but I wanted to play football. Mm-hmm. So I went to college, and I wanted to – and I just was hanging out with the football players. I was – when I graduated high school, I'm like 180 pounds. Now it's a year later, and I'm 220, 230, and I'm on that iron. And I'm hanging out with football players. Long story short, the coach where I was at went to UNR, University of Nevada, Reno, which had a hell of a football program. And he told the coach Chris Ault about me, and they flew me out there and put a basketball in my hand. Now I'm 275, bitching 350, 400 pounds. So I put a little iron up, and they put a basketball in my hand, and I'm dunking and doing stuff. And they gave me a full-ride scholarship to play football when I never, ever played tackle football in my life. I played flag football. My parents wouldn't let me play tackle. I got a full-ride scholarship.
Wow, that's crazy.
For just being an athlete.
Yeah.
They said, you know what? We might be able to do something with this kid.
And that's usually how it goes in sports. I mean, you know, they see you come in. Oh, shit, this guy is 6'6", 6'7". So I'm going to tug you this way to basketball, and you're going to be my power forward / center. Or I'm going to tug you over to football, and you're going to be my my left tackle or my offensive lineman. Like, so definitely can relate to the sport factor. So you end up getting into business because you and Taker go way back.
Mm-hmm.
So you and Taker go way back, and wrestling, was that ever anything that was on your mind as far as, you know what, after playing football and basketball, I'm going to take on wrestling. Let's just see. Or was this something that somebody pulled you into?
I didn't even watch wrestling. When I was coming up in the Bay Area, we watched roller derby. And roller derby,
that's tough.
Roller derby. See, I went to high school in like 75 to 79, and I'm from the Bay Area. So you had the Hells Angels, the Black Panthers, and, you know.
The Raiders? You had the Raiders at that time?
The Hells Angels, the Black Panthers, all the same thing, man. And so roller derby was really big back then. So I didn't even watch wrestling. And then they were filming a movie with Sylvester Stallone in it called Over the Top. It was an arm wrestling movie.
I remember that.
Yeah, they were filming that here in Vegas. And it was at the MGM. Well, I worked at a strip club called the Crazy Horse Saloon. I was a bartender, manager, bouncer, you know, all that. And some of them dudes, Scott Norton, a lot of them guys in that movie were wrestlers. They just weren't big name wrestlers. All the extra guys. And long story short, they're like, man, big, I was just massive, man. I'm all tatted up. And back then, this is 80, 87. There's no black people with tattoos back then, man, unless you had a club from a sorority or something. But there was no people with tattoos, and I'm sleeved up, and I was just different, man. So I made a call, went to the Monster Factory. Within, like I said, a couple more months, Jerry Lawler seen me. And he put me right to work. My very first match ever. No practice, no training. My very first match ever was against Jerry Lawler in Memphis, Tennessee on a Monday night, which is big.
Wow.
And I beat him in the middle, 1-2-3, as
the Soul Taker.
Soul Taker. Yeah.
The Soul Taker.
But that's the time where I met Mark, because I did my program with Jerry, and then they said, hey, we're going to bring this redheaded kid in to work against you. This is 88, 89, and it was Taker, and we had a match together, and the match was so shitty that they said we because he's only been in the business like a little bit longer than me, but he knew a lot more than me.
Yeah.
And so they put us together as a tag team, and we became really good friends, and I was at the airport yesterday. We were rapping, chopping it up, so. Yeah. To this day, we're still good friends.
That's dope. So how instrumental was Lawler? And I believe Dutch Mantel was there at the time. You know, the people that actually helped you, groom you at that period of time.
I don't know if Dutch helped. Dutch tried to fire me.
Ah, really?
Dutch tried to fire me. Well, Dutch came into his... And Dutch is a good dude. I ain't got nothing against Dutch. But he came to his back and said, hey, so we're going to have to let you go, man. Sorry, we're going to finish you up this week. And I'm like, well, cool. I'll go somewhere else. I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the time I get back to my room, Jerry Lawler's calling me and say, you're not going nowhere. So Lawler told him, no, man, you ain't letting him go. So I held that against Dutch forever.
Well, oh, word. He damn, I didn't me. Know that. He was both
yeah,
of them right
now. Trying to fire me.
Oh, so, man. That's...
I ain't know that.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, like I said, I'm cool with Dutch. I got no problem with Dutch.
No doubt.
So, you know, you end up getting of course, called up. You're working some dark matches in WWF at the time. And you come in, and the first persona they give you at that time was Sir Charles.
That was only one time. In Arizona, where Barkley had just went to Phoenix.
Oh, 94.
I was getting my tryout, and they wanted me to put some heat on me. So whatever better way to call me Sir Charles, because he was over there. Oh. And so that's the only time they called me Sir Charles. And then I got my tryout, and then Vince called me to the office and said, we're going to hire you. We're going to do this. We're going to put you on payroll. And he said, I got to come up something to cover your face. He said, you got a body of a monster, but you got a baby face. He goes, so I'm going to have to do something with your face. A few months go by, then they call me, and they basically say, go rent the movie Live and Let Die. And there was a voodoo character in that, you know. Oh, yeah, he was also Chipola Man. <That dude.
laughs>
And we were off running, but that's why they painted my face up. And, you know, I'm 59 years now. Oh, now. I mean, I don't look that good, but I'm sure I look a lot younger than 59. So,
yeah.
That baby face helped me in the long run.
Yeah, that character, man, to this day, people talk about it. And to me, if right now, 2020, that character will be huge, you know, and because now what you got the movie of scene, so that you know you could see all this thing that they could do with a character like the one you have. And the thing, no matter what they have you do, from making an urn into a chain to, you know what I mean, a fighter, anything character that you took over, is like you did it justice, you know what I mean? And it's they couldn't deny you. And that was something like, now as I, you know, as an old fuck that I am now, I could see that and I could admire it. And like yo, this dude, bro, like I've just started thinking, everybody that you face just by name, you know, throughout your career, like, dude, like this guy fought people that, you know, they were big, from, you know, Warrior, Hogan, Hart, Bob Backlund, you know, Taz, you know what I mean? Like,
there's very few that I haven't worked against.
I was gonna ask you, do you ever wrestle Ric Flair?
No.
See, that I was looking like, damn, man, I want to see. But yeah,
I work with him. I've never worked with Flair. But like me and Flair are cool, but I just know I never worked with him.
Wow, that's a few.
I'm surprised. He's with Godfather. I'm surprised I didn't do something with him as Godfather.
Yeah, that would have been huge, especially 2002, you came back.
He loved his toes, believe me.
For sure.
Yeah, that definitely would have been something, man. Just imagine Nate out there, and you got the whole train going on, and, you know, you try to convince Nate to come. And
what is it, a mountain? What did he call it?
Yeah, he starts talking about Space Mountain.
Space
and
Mountain
shit.
And shit, yeah.
No, but so to go back over your career, so you had, you know, you came in, they booked you as Papa Shango, which, like Chief said, I enjoyed it. And as a kid, you know, that shit looked real to me as a kid. I was like, oh shit, they got him throwing up. I was like, I ain't fucking with that, but I'm riding with him. Like, that's not the person that I want to cross, but the character itself, yeah, I liked it. And, you know, of course, I was reading online, and my sources are Google that shit to my fans out there who listen to the show, but they were talking about your debut. You were supposed to do the run in and inside the match between Sid and Hogan, and it didn't go well or something. Can you tell us about that situation?
The long story short is I got the cue late. And they sent me late. By the time I got there, you know, he had to kick out of a finish. But yeah, none of that was my fault.
Yeah.
I actually never heard about it until years afterwards. And people would ask me about it. Then at that time, I knew what I had to do. I didn't know if who was pinning. All I knew is when they said go, I was going to run my ass to the ring and do what I had to do. That's all I know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's what I did. So I never really heard about it. And then years and years go by, and they're asking me about it. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And the reason I never knew about it is because it wasn't my fault. It was whoever was at the Gorilla Station, and to be honest, I don't remember who was there, but whoever Jobby
fuck
West.
You. Whoever was there. Go,
they forgot to give me the cue, and all of a sudden they went, oh shit, go.
Wow. And I remember seeing you hesitating, you know what I mean? Because, like, you knew what the fuck you was doing, but yeah. The timing wasn't right, so you did the hesitate. Perhaps it's nowhere to be seen. They edit that shit out, but you know what I mean? Like you said, it wasn't your fault.
I'd have to see it. That's so long ago, I don't even remember.
Yeah, man. It's a lot.
I have to look at it. I like to, but like you said, if it's edited, I wouldn't be able to see it.
Yeah. Speaking of editing, man, so I'm sitting in the house. It's me and my son. He's 2 months, and he's already a wrestling fan. Like, and anytime I turn on wrestling, he turns his head. I don't care what type of position I have his body in. He turns his head and he's locked in. Like what was it? So like yesterday, I was watching the match with Faye Jackson on the WWE Network, and then today I'm watching WrestleMania 2000. And the only reason why I go back to WrestleMania 2000, because this was like one of my favorite entrances to the ring. All right. So I'm hoping to see this entrance because I haven't seen it in so long. So the entrance that we're talking about the entrance with you and Ice-T for the remix of Pimpin' Ain't Easy. So I'm sitting down. I'm with my son. Network starts. I'm watching it. Automatically cuts to you inside the ring, doing your whole spiel about, is there any pimps in this house? And I'm mad at this time because that was such a dope entrance. So how was it like working with Ice-T, far as that go? Because that Ruthless Aggression album, to this day, I tell everybody, like, WWE is not using their mind. I would have did a part 2, part 3 because y'all had some dope bangers on there.
I've only met him twice. And we were so busy that day. I actually had a 64 lowrider, and I brought it because it was in L.A. Mm-hmm. And so I had it shipped out to L.A., and he was checking out my car, saying that he'd had one time. But I had a badass 64. And I was so involved with my car, really didn't get a chance to hang with him. I didn't have nothing to do with his music. I actually was talking with Snoop, and Snoop's like, hey, man, I got this new cat named Exhibit, man, and I'd like him to do your music, you know. So by the time I went to talk to Vince, he'd already had Ice-T do it because I had plans to bring Ice-T in to do that WrestleMania. But yeah, it would have been Exhibit.
Exhibit, like, to me, would have been better. It would have been better. Rocksteady Crew.
Yo, like that moment, like, to me. And it's crazy because it's almost like WWE has erased it from everywhere. Because I even tried to YouTube that shit, couldn't find it. Yeah. I was like, what's going on? Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
I think the beginning of that song, it says, grab your bitches.
Perhaps, yeah.
Well, yeah, you're right.
That initially, they probably edited that part out. They probably edited that whole thing.
Yeah, they edited out everything. The only thing I got right now is you in the ring. It's you and D-Lo, and you know you're talking to the crowd or whatever. And then Ice-T is getting ready to dip out underneath the rope. That's it. We don't see no performance, no nothing.
That's because they cut out all that shit. I don't tell them what I said.
Oh man.
So
talk about
they edited it because it was too much.
Oh, right now, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, now, man, you have the game on lock, you know what I mean? Just for the character. You fucking have an OnlyFans, dude. You know what I mean?
Dude, I wish Godfather had social media and Instagram and Facebook. I had 20 million motherfucking followers, man. Oh. God had him hooked on there every night.
Bro, you would have had everything. The brand, condoms, boxes, weed. Oh, man. You would be killing the game, B.
All of it.
Yeah. Damn, man. But, like, talking about
Omaha.
Yeah. Omaha. Yeah. When you hear the word Omaha, what does it come to mind? What does it come to mind when you hear Omaha?
I think I said something about some Omaha hoes one time or something. And I think I was you can't forget, man, I did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows.
Right.
And I did a lot of house shows where we really, I calmed the Godfather down on TV in the house shows. I would let it loose, man.
Where was that?
Godfather in the house show was out there because I wasn't on TV. Yeah. And I would, you wouldn't believe the shit I did.
Oh, man. Good old days.
So,
but you couldn't get away with all that now.
No. I mean, not really. I mean, it's starting to get that way with the way wrestling looks right now. If you know,
be like a tier that you will have to pay for it, and people, trust me, will pay for that kind of material. You know what I mean? But it's crazy.
You guys think there'll ever be another Godfather calling girls hoes?
No.
Talking about smoking weed, rolling fatties, would light that motherfucker up.
Nah.
Girls.
Not on national TV, not like you did it, you know, nah.
The only wrestler ever.
Yeah, perhaps somewhere in Germany. Somewhere out there.
The only wrestler ever to have marijuana leaves on an official WWE shirt. And the whole bottom of it's marijuana leaves. And that's what proud things I am. Because there's had wrestlers that says this, but nobody ever had marijuana leaves on a shirt.
No.
Man, if they would have been more open with that, you know what I mean? But everything's politics.
I would have been more open.
Yeah, to some extent, right?
I mean,
hey, just the fact that Vince knew what I was talking about, because when we started The Godfather, I'm like, Vince, now, this is what I'm saying, just so you know, I said, but Vince, so many people in this, they always knew I smoked. And I'm like, Vince, so many people in this world smoke, man. Let me go after the smokers. And I'm like, let me talk about, and I'm like, this is what this means. This is what this means. He's like, really? I'm like, they knew what I was doing, but it was getting over with the people because, you know, everybody smokes. I've never smoked. Lying motherfucker. Everybody smokes. Yeah, but one time, everybody.
Yeah, I'm not a quitter. So, yeah, I smoke.
No one likes a quitter. But so the whole concept. This was your brainchild, The Godfather? Because when I think about it, I think about two things. I think about the 1970s, you know, films back then, you know, Godfather, things like that.
Well, to me, the Godfather wasn't a gimmick, because as we could see, that's how he is 24/7.
Well, no, I'm not.
But other characters, they're perhaps a gimmick, but The Godfather is pretty much being himself.
The Godfather is a calm down Charles Wright.
Okay.
Everything, I've worked in strip clubs, I've owned strip clubs, been dealing with hoes all my life. And Ron Simmons used to say, this gimmick was my wife's idea, not mine. It was all my wife's idea. Oh. I just did the smoking part and the silly part.
Congrats, she came by the way.
She had the best maid, the costumes, the jewelry. We had a full-time we had a seamstress working for us, making coats. We had a jeweler making jewelry for me. And I just did the entertaining part. But all that was my wife's idea. I wanted to be a mean pimp. And then Vince is like, Charles, I can't have you on there calling like the girls holes and smacking them around. I didn't want to wear the colors, and I didn't want to wear the hats, and I didn't wear it, but... I kind of did what my wife said. It all worked out pretty good.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, congratulations. I believe it'll be 20-year anniversary this
20
year.
20 years, yeah, man.
20 years. That's
20 years.
God bless, man.
Yeah, man. She's a good girl.
That's what's up.
Yeah, man.
I think she's a pimp. Every time I come home, like I came home with money yesterday, she just like, what's money? And she'll count and say, you know, lying, ain't you? I'm like, you're joking. You're joking. I'm like, I made extra money and you're telling me I'm lying. It's, you know, that's why she's on it, though. But that's good because I can just stay high and do my thing.
That's what's up. Hey, well, earlier we mentioned D'Lo. How's your relationship with him? And if y'all been keeping in contact, and how was it tag teaming with him?
Oh, I like D'Lo a lot, man. After TNA, he came to work for me at the Club Cheetahs. He came to work for me for a few years there. And then I think now he's running a wrestling school. I think he works at a cannabis place doing something. And then he's doing his own shows and stuff. I don't see him that much, but when I do, it's good to see him. I see RVD lives here. I see him a lot. I'll probably see him tonight because we're going to do a marijuana session.
Okay. How's his CBD? I've been, you know,
I tried it. He gave me some and I tried it. And I don't really like the CBD stuff. I think it's got to have THC. But I remember like Big Gay or something, whatever I put it on, it felt better. So, I mean, it works.
Okay. Yeah, it's a wave.
Now, speaking of D-Lo, speaking of, you know, just your career, one thing we got to touch on is the Nation. Now, you personally are one of the OG members. Matter of fact, you were one of the first new members that...
When the Nation really became the Nation.
Right.
Yeah, he was that muscle.
And I remember your first night, you actually pinned Taker.
Taker. Yeah.
You wouldn't believe that. You want to hear the story about that?
Yeah, what's up? Yeah.
So I'm coming back, right? What people don't know about me is wrestling was never my first job. The strip clubs were my first where I made my money. Wrestling to me, I was just this crazy, but believe me, I used to be a crazy motherfucker, still crazy. But it was just a way for me to have fun. So when I wasn't having fun, I would leave, right? Papa Shango, what happened to Papa Shango is I was going through a bad divorce and I was in a bad place. So it was time for me to leave. And then they would call me and say, come back. And I'd be like, nah, I don't want to come back. So that's why I would come and go. When I wasn't having fun, I would leave.
And you was 27, right?
Yeah, I was 27 years old. Wow. Well, what was the question? What was the question?
So, yeah, the question was dealing with the Nation. You end up pinning Taker.
So I'm back. So now I'm going to TV, but what you don't know is I'm Papa Shango. And I'm coming in, and there's a picture on the internet or on my Instagram of me. And Jerry Lawler did the face. Mm-hmm. And so it was a whole new look. It was more menacing. It was pretty. I got really good shape. So I show up at TV, man. I got ready. Jerry does my face. All of a sudden, they say, hey, take your makeup off. Vince wants to talk to you. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I go in there and talk to Vince. He goes, change of plans. I'm going to put you in the Nation of Domination tonight. You and Ron Simmons are going to have a match against Undertaker. You're going to go over. Wow. And I'm like, what?
Just like that.
Yeah. And he goes, and here you go. I got you an outfit to wear.
Damn, Vince.
And then I'm like, okay, all right. And that's the first time I actually met Ron Simmons. I knew who he was, but I never met him. Ron worked for WCW,
But he had a college football career, you know?
Yeah, Ron was one of the baddest football players ever.
Period.
And so then they put me in the Nation. Then right away, two reasons why. They needed some muscle because they knew they were going to bring The Rock in. So they needed to make the group look a lot tougher. And they just came out with the Kane character. And back then, they didn't turn the lights off for anybody but Papa Shango. And they start turning them off for Kane. So they didn't want to have two characters like that at the same time. So they put me in the Nation. And then right away, Vince came to me and Ron after a minute. And he said, hey, they were going to put Dwayne in there. And Vince said right then, man, I remember like it was yesterday. Vince says, you know what? He goes, once I get people to hate this kid, when I turn him, he will be the biggest thing wrestling's ever seen. Right. That's what he told me. And so then I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, well, they needed some muscle in the Nation. Mm-hmm. That's why they put me there. Yeah. Good group, fun group. We didn't know at the time what we were doing because it was just, we were just doing our jobs. We were all good friends.
But in the state of day now, it was like y'all were faces. You know, the way, everything that's going on in 2020. Like, y'all were faces because y'all were spoken the truth. You know what I mean? That's just crazy.
And Ron was so good at what he did,
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I hear they might be doing a new Nation of some type pretty soon.
The Hurt Business.
Yeah.
I mean, that looks promising. I mean, to me, there's never going to be another Nation, period. I don't care how you dress it up, paint it. You know, that could be a variation, similarities, but I would never compare anything to the Nation because when you look at the Nation, just going off what Cheech was saying, the Nation not only spoke to, the minorities, but it also spoke to America, period, because it wasn't like, Farouk, Ron Simmons was lying, He was, to me, I don't even think those were written down promos. I mean, I honestly feel like that was right off the hip.
Well, I would shoot on you, man. He'd shoot. That man's so talented, it's not funny. He'd shoot on you.
That's awesome.
It was great. I think one day the Nation will be put in the Hall of Fame.
They need.
I just don't know how they're going to handle the Rock situation, but then the Nation will be in there. I think they're going to do something with the Nation because at this WrestleMania, they canceled a lot of stuff the Nation was doing. So usually when they do stuff like that, something's happening.
Yeah, talking about another faction, you know, like everybody else, you know, Puerto Rican, we like to play dominoes, you know. Some people call it bones, you know.
Okay.
Shout out to Savio, you know. But
Savio? Yeah. Savio knows how to count.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good friend of the podcast. And the BSK, what was the origins of that? And, you know, for those perhaps don't know about
it. What people don't realize is they have this big feud between us and the clique, and it ain't nothing like that. First of all, BSK would go through the clique so quick it wouldn't be funny. So there was, I mean, was in that? Real life. Really? I mean, let's just be honest. You know, we had guys that could really go.
Yeah.
And but we were friends, man. I was friends with those guys. BSK was guys that played dominoes during the day. And we'd be at TV, and you'd be at TV at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe till 11 o'clock at night. So you have a lot of time on your hands. Yeah. So we played dominoes. A lot of people think it was Undertaker's group. That was Yokozuna's group. And that was Savio, Yoko, Rikishi, the Godwins. And we were guys. The Godwins didn't play dominoes, so everybody else did. And then we'd hang out some at night, but it was mostly like at nighttime, you'd be me, Undertaker, and Yoko, because we'd stay in strip clubs every night. And those other guys didn't hang in the strip clubs like we did.
Man, imagine that there was social media when the BSK was running. Bro, imagine going live on a game. See how many people would tune in. Dude, man.
I think Taker told a story one night about me and him getting in a fight over a hat.
Yeah, man, I wanted to ask you about that, man. So how true is that story? Because it seems like it's legit, and I can picture the shit. So
you know what's cool about it? I was at my club when I did that, maybe 3 years ago I did that. And you don't know, they just say, hey, we're going to ask you some questions about BSK. We're going to ask you some questions about Owen Hart. We're going to ask you some questions about Undertaker. And you just answer the questions, but you don't really know. And it was like, can you tell us about this story between you and Undertaker that went over this hat? So I tell my story, not knowing that Undertaker's telling it or not. And so what's cool about it, he never knew what I said. I never knew what he said, but it's the same exact story.
Yeah.
And so it exactly happened like that. And we got to do it. I told him I made him wear that hat. And he eventually wore the hat.
That's dope.
Like when I heard that story, like my mind automatically went Chappelle Show, Charlie Murphy, Real Hollywood Story. It's like, yeah. You're like, I could just picture it, you know, it just imagine if Charlie Murphy, like God rest his soul, would narrate that story.
But see, like he said at the end of that, he says, yeah, you kind of had to be there. It was a crazy night because we had a lot of nights like that, and that was just a normal night back then because there was no social media. There was no cell phones. There's no internet. There wasn't even no sports center. So you there was nobody. Oh, boy, if they had right now, we'd take us in jail. All of us be in jail, all the stuff we were doing.
So speaking of that, partying. Now, you got a chance to run into some real talented artists, you know, along the way, hip hop as well. You know, there's a story out there, and I don't know if it's true or not. So, can you just enlighten us on this story? With I believe this was Cypress Hill.
Be real.
I wasn't there when Undertaker and all them were drinking.
Yeah,
I wasn't there.
You wasn't.
All I know is what I heard is basically. But what I can tell you what I think happened.
Okay.
Back then, nobody took pills like wrestlers took pills.
Pain pills.
Yeah. And so probably Cypress Hill was more into smoking weed, not taking pills.
Right.
Drinking and taking pills and doing all type of shit. So probably hanging out with the wrestling crew, it probably caught up to them. They were probably doing a lot of shit they weren't used to doing instead of just smoking weed. I just let it go. Then, you know, that's what happened. What's the story? I hear that they put them all to sleep, which is probably true.
Right. I mean, because...
some guys back then, man, you take 5 Vicodins, 5 Somas, some Plastidil, some Percocet, some Vicoprofen, drink a half a bottle of Jack Daniels, and then go out.
That was it.
Okay, and that was the lifetime. I am so I am so happy that at 27 years old, I was Papa Shango. I tried marijuana for the first time in my life. In my life. Wow. And it got me off of all that shit. Will I have a beer, a shot now and then? Yeah. I don't get drunk. I don't take no pills. I only smoke cannabis. I don't take no pills besides a leaf or something like that, Allegra or something. But no pills to this day. And I think it saved me.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, I was going to ask you a question from one of the Marks all the way from Puerto Rico. He was asking me, what was the harshest punishment you ever saw been given in a wrestler's court?
That I remember? It was always like, it was always like you had to pay for the guy's room for a week. You had to pay for his rent a car. You had to buy him a bag of weed. You had to buy him a case of beer. It wasn't no like you have to carry his bag shit. It was always you had to pay for something. Yeah. I took D'Lo Brown. When it started, I was the bailiff, and then Undertaker was the judge. And then I got tired of showing up for him, so Bradshaw became the thing, and I got out of it. But I was going to take D'Lo Brown to court one time. This reputation of the word marijuana and good weed or chronic. I had all my hookups. Every place I had hookups, right? And we were in Chicago where D'Lo's from. And D'Lo's like, big dog, I got you, man. Don't worry. I got the fire. I got the chronic, man. It's going to put you on your knees. I'm like, really? Okay, D'Lo. Okay. I'm like, all right, D'Lo. If I say do this, bro, make sure it's the fire. Because, you know, I don't smoke that swaggy daggy fucking shit.
That shake. Hey,
D'Lo shows up. This shit is got, it's that press. It looks like it's pressed with seeds and stems. Oh. And it looked like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that's that shake bag.
Get a shoebox and get the seeds out of it. It might not have been that bad, but that's what it looked like to me. So I had to go a whole night without smoking good weed. I wasn't smoking shit, and I couldn't get no weed. So I was going to take him to court over the misrepresentation of the word chronic, but he settled out of court.
He settled out of court. That's awesome, man.
I never had to take him. I don't know what he settled. I think he bought me a couple bottles of Jack or something like that. We used to drink a lot of Jack Daniels back then. Straight. I think he bought me a sticker. Basically, he paid us off.
Gotcha. Well, remind me to never have D-Lo buy me any weed.
And we are back, man. Listen, this is just part one. Part one, bro. I mean, that story with D'Lo Brown and the bad bag of weed, the false representation of good quality weed, good chronic.
Man, so mad. I'm so angry I missed that interview. Oh my God.
Bro, listen, this is just part one. Part two gets even more hilarious with some of these stories. I mean, we get to dive real deep into the world of the Godfather, the world of Charles Wright, you know. So, man, I'm definitely have fun with part one. Wait till you hear part two. Part two is definitely the best thus far. You can definitely tune into this episode on all your platforms. Hey, if you actually want to watch this episode and actually see us interview the Godfather, go check out our YouTube page. It's underneath the same name, Marks with Mikes. It's that simple. So type in Marks with the Mikes, type in the Godfather interview part one, and you'll be able to pop up and actually watch it. But listen, part two will be available next Thursday. It's dropping 12 a.m. So that means as soon as the clock hits 11:59, as soon as it hits midnight for the next day, it's dropping at 12 a.m.
Some bullshit, man. Enjoy the interview, folks.
Enjoy, listen.
Enjoy Dre. It. Enjoy Dre. The fucking interview.
You're going to get the chance to watch this. It's hilarious, bro.
Well, first of all, peoples, I can't give a little sneaky peek, but don't worry about it. It was a great interview. It would have been better if the Juice Man was there and his juice boxes talking with the Godfather. I would have told him about my juice boxes. He would have told me about some hoes and we would have connected real good. I don't care. Just enjoy the fucking interview. I'm done.
All right, y'all. But listen, real talk. Make sure you definitely share this episode with your friends, your family. You know, hit that share link. Give us, of course, a like, subscribe. And hey, make sure you do leave us a voice message. You never know what we may send you. Once you leave us a voice message, give us a contact, you know, hit us up in a DM, whether that be the Book of Faces or that be IG or Twitter. Let us know that you left us a voicemail, and what we'll do for you is we'll send you a nice gift on us. It could be many of the prizes that we have available from all of the interviews that we've had over this past 4 months. So you're talking about merchandise from Moshe Edwards, Trey Lamar. Of course, we have PME merchandise, the new Jocelyn and Vero merchandise to give away. So it's all there waiting for you to claim it. Leave us a voice message. Click on the description inside the link of this episode where it says, I don't know, send a voice message. And we'll get right back to you. But part two is definitely, definitely going to be something to be reckoned with. We'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, and thank you to One Life to Play for editing this episode on YouTube. But before we get out of here, we have to remind you to wash your hand and wash your ass. And use what, Dre?
Use soap, people. Sorry, I'm not in the best of moods, but use soap, damn it.
Since Cheech is not here, I'm going to say it for him. You want to make sure you do it from face to ass, but not ass to face.
Good night, everybody. No crying in the car.
Bro, don't cry in the car, man. Listen, trust me.
Cry in the car, man.
No, it's cool, bro. It's cool, man. Look, plenty of more good times to come. But, hey, appreciate you guys. Love you.
Look at me, everything I own's iced out. Pimp baby, you can see my wrist with the lights out. This how I do it, mad bitches in clothes. Godfather baby on the plate to my rose. Step back, hate to make a little room for my hoes. Gators on my feet, take a look at my toes. Money is the reason all the real players know that. Godfather lays punks to rest. You got no chance up against the best. I rocks in the east and a rolls in the west. If you don't dig the pimpin'